This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Your Friendly Neighbourhood Bisexuals are all about Midsummer. Ruby, Anthony and James have been chatting with Midsummer acts over the past few shows, including powerful feminist cabaret Killjoy, the very crafty Yvette Turnbull, and the bent Bollywood babes of Karma Dance. Check out our podcast to hear our chats with these talented folks and to sample some of their toe-tapping tunes. We'll have Karma Dance and Killjoy back on the show on Tuesday 30th of January for the Triple Bypass Midsummer Special, the Representation Hour. If you need some more B in your life, download our podcasts on iTunes or at joy.org.au/triplebypass and tune in Tuesday nights at 9. Triple Bypass, proudly putting the big, beautiful B in LGBTI on Joy.
For reckless minds, I'm intertwined so deep with you.
Good evening. You are on Joy. I'm Jennifer. This is Triple Bypass, and it's the last Tuesday of the month, which means it is the representation hour. Thank you so much to Maddie and the Urban Dreaming team. Triple Bypass broadcasts from the lands of the Kulin Nation, and we acknowledge the past, present, and emerging elders of the people of this land, especially the brother boys and sister girls of the Indigenous LGBTQI community. It's 5 minutes past nine, and we just heard Sirens from Rin McArdle. And sitting opposite me right now is Kat Scobie.
Hello.
Hello. And Rin McArdle.
Hello.
Hi. What are you doing here? Why are you in the studio?
I don't know. You told us to come.
Yeah, we got invited, and here we are.
Kat and Rin are members of the inimitable Killjoy.
True that.
Who are you? You're doing all sorts of exciting, shocking,
yes,
wonderful things wonderful for things. Midsummers.
Very much so.
Yeah,
we've got a show tomorrow night called Queer Joy, which is a cabaret made up of some very, very special guests, plus little Killjoy acts that you won't see anywhere else. Well, you might, but some of them are very fresh or you don't see very often. So it's a very exciting. Yeah, tomorrow night, 8:30. That's a plug early on.
There you go.
Get your tickets.
Look at that.
On Eventbrite.
10 minutes
straight in there.
Basically, what Kat's trying to say is that we just do a dance to NSYNC.
Yeah, we do.
We have an act called Boy Band, and it's literally just us doing a dance to Bye 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 by NSYNC.
Yeah. And you've probably seen that. Like, you might have seen that before. A lot of...
Because we're very famous.
We're very famous, and we do it all the time. I did for about a 2 week block, I think, for a while.
I think there are
NSYNC in white.
Worse things to be known for than doing a dance to NSYNC Bye Bye Bye.
I could live with that.
Yeah.
If that's my legacy, then so be it.
I would call that a success. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So that's Rin for the night.
Writer of Sirens.
So Killjoys are at Melba Spiegel Tent.
Yes.
In Collingwood.
Tent, that's right. Yep.
So check out the Midsummer website for details.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight, we're going to talk about your favourite bi plus characters, people in characters, and why they're so rad.
Yeah. What an exciting thing to be doing.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I
learned some stuff doing this.
It's a little bit exciting when you start digging, realizing how many people you didn't know. And you two have got one that really was relatively unknown on your list until she died.
Which one?
Yeah. Whitney Houston.
Yes, yeah. That's mine.
That's
Whitney Houston.
Yeah. And nobody knew.
Well,
allegedly.
Does anyone really know or not know? I don't know. But I think it's, I was really surprised when I found that out as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's kind of exciting to consider that where somebody like Whitney Houston might not have felt that she was able to have her career and be out.
Totally,
We can now have somebody like Frank Ocean knocking out songs like Chanel and just wearing it on a sleeve.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Less than two generations.
Mm.
This is what we want.
Mm-hmm.
Just march on all kinds of buildings.
Mm. Yeah, it sort of struck me, actually, looking back through history a bit at bisexuals that I didn't even, think about.
Yeah.
That there have been an awful lot, actually, and it just so happens that a lot of them didn't really talk about it because it was dangerous or whatever, or they were in a marriage where they could just,
pass.
Invisible.
Yeah, yeah,
pass.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Quite often when we are written up in history, it's as having a lesbian phase or a homosexual phase or homosexual periods and then going back to being straight or, Freddie Mercury's the classic, had relationships with women but was gay. David Bowie experimented with men, but definitely, clearly was straight, married a man. Now, I see, Kat,
yes,
that you have a very exciting-looking book in front of you as well. Rather large.
She made so many notes.
And weighty tome.
I did homework.
Did
I?
Oh.
No, I didn't.
She Kat literally has a thesis in front of her right now. We're all about to learn so much.
I'm looking forward to
it's the best.
Yeah. Well, because you know we're doing shows and stuff. I thought it would be cool to pick a showgirl.
Yeah.
So I picked Josephine Baker, and the more I learned about her, the more I was just like, she is so awesome. And I also picked Frida Kahlo because they, although it's not super well documented, probably for lots of different reasons, they got together in 1939 or whatever the hell it was. And how exciting is that? Oh, cool is that? Oh, that's a nice
That was just jumping in a little bit early.
Yeah.
Just really setting the tone. Can you please play that? Can you play that in the background
while I talk about it?
So it was a late night, and
it was a smoky bar in Paris.
So. Speaking of Josephine Baker, and her desire to be heard of immediately, apparently, tell us what did you discover?
I discovered that she was born in the States, in St. Louis, Missouri. Very, very poor young person. She got into dance and became famous because she was good at comedy. And then she hated the States because it was such a racist place that she just could not live there comfortably. And so she went to Paris. And Paris had this weird fetish with African culture. And yeah. So they exoticized the hell out of her. And she kind of, you know, took it on became one of the best paid performers in history.
Famous for her dance routine with the banana skirt.
The banana skirt, exactly.
Mm.
And I was reading a very academic tome about about how she was kind of like the banana skirt being a kind of a phallic, you know, using a bit of semiotic theory, I just like a really phallic thing, so that at the time she was also very aware of the sort of, you know, the male gaze and how, you know, exoticized and fetishized she was. She was also making a statement about that through her performances, and would frequently kind of like cross her eyes and like do these like weird little things that would sort of keep it her own work.
Yeah. She was kind of amazing at that subversion of the over sexualization and exoticization of her sexuality and her blackness, and unreal.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And then she went on and joined the French Resistance and like,
as you know,
became a spy.
Yeah.
And then went back to America and fought for equal rights and and the abolishment of segregation and stuff in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Actually an amazing person. I think her bisexuality is not super it's recognized, like it's there, but it's not like it's kind of, she kept it pretty under wraps, but
yeah,
you know,
I imagine having even an inkling of desire to ever go back to the States probably made that fairly necessary.
She kind of went back with her fists raised, could say, and tore it down.
Stormed the gates.
Yeah.
In honour of Frida Josephine McDonald, or Josephine Baker, as she is better known, here is Breezing Along with the Breeze. You are on Joy. It's 13 minutes past 9, and we will be back with Killjoy for more.
I have been a rover since I was a child. No one to love care for me. Knocked this world all over, kinda grew up wild. My home is wherever I may be. I'm just breezing along with the breeze. is singing the tree, pleasing to live, I'm living to please. Sky is the only roof I have over my head. All when I weary, Mother Nature makes me a bed. I'm just going long as I please, breezing along, just along with the breeze.
Indeed, turn us on. You are on Joy. It's 18 minutes past nine. This is Triple Bypass. I'm Jennifer, which means it's the last Tuesday of the month and it's the representation hour. And in celebration of Midsummer and queer stuff and just all the things that make us joyous, I have guests this month. Doesn't happen very often, but isn't it exciting when it does? I've got Kat Scobie and Rin McArdle in the studio from Killjoy, and we have had some messages. Rin and Kat killing those plugs. Yes. Someone's very proud of you both.
I wonder who that was.
Ruby's written in and said, saw Killjoy last week for the second time, and it was incredible. Defs recommend. And we've had somebody else write in to say, so the only time they don't call being bi a phase is when they're talking about a bi person having a straight or gay phase. Oh, we're like the moon, aren't we? It's all about phases. All about phases. I need the sound effect of crickets chirping. That was a really, really fun play on words, Jennifer. Good job. Mm, comedy hour. Now, Kat.
Yes.
We were saying before we listened to the divine Josephine Baker that you've been doing homework.
I did do a little bit. I've got
which
a little
is super
bit,
couple exciting.
Of, yeah, a couple
and,
of notes.
And you've brought in a second weighty tome.
Yes.
With the just exquisite Frida Kahlo.
Frida Kahlo,
all over
yeah.
It.
She was yeah. My other pick. I thought she's actually existed at a similar time to Josephine Baker, and I kind of picked her because they were rumouredly had an affair in 1939, which isn't that so cool. I mean, a lot of people know about the life of Frida, so, you know, we know that she was married to Diego Rivera and they had a, you know, tumultuous slash very sort of, I don't know, supportive and also damaging relationship with each other. It was an open relationship. Diego had a lot of affairs and so did Frida.
They were married twice, weren't they?
Yeah, they
married and divorced and married again.
They got divorced because Diego did a really bad thing and
yep.
Frida wasn't into it at all and she, yeah, divorced him. And rightly so at the time. But, yeah, I think what's interesting is that they were pretty open. Like, he was very supportive of her affairs with women especially, but not so supportive of her affairs with men.
Mm.
Apparently he used to get quite jealous. That seems to be a common thread here and there. Like,
a little bit.
Yeah, a bit of a...
You can be bi as long as it's super sexy and it feeds my needs.
Exactly. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, I don't feel like my ownership is of you as a wife is threatened or whatever, that fucked up thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she... So she was quite open and it's, you know, the way that... And he was very supportive of that. And also she was... She was kind of trans as well. Like, she used to dress as a man and she talked about her masculinity and talked about being, you know, like her masculine side being a very important part of her identity. And she also saw a really feminine side in Diego, and that was part of, I think, what she saw as their sort of clicking.
Yeah.
And...
Which isn't all that surprising now, given that there is, you know, a bit of... research being done now, particularly, regulars of Triple Bypass might have heard Misty Farquhar talking week before, about their research project, which is there's a huge overlap between non-binary sexuality and non-binary gender.
Yeah.
So, but at the time, quite shocking.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think that, you know, like Melbourne and a lot of circles that we probably move in, I think they moved in a bit of a bubble, and so, you know, it was kind of like a bohemian, free thinking, freewheeling kind of time. And I think what we all think is that, you know, this is the most open time that we've ever had, but I think there were pockets, a lot of pockets of history where it was where you could talk openly about it. Might not have made it into the history books or onto the radio, if there was any at the time, but, like, you know, it was definitely there. It was definitely a thing, and it was definitely, people knew about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we know that in Berlin, before the change of government and the emergence of the Nazi Party, that gender studies and non-binary sexuality and non-binary gender were really progressive. We would have, you know, had the Stonewall moments generations earlier had it not been for the Reich.
Know what, there were at least 200 gay clubs in Berlin back then.
Yeah,
like, just think about that, you know, like, think about you know, the parties they would have been awesome.
That really would have been something to see.
It would have been great. Yep.
Really quite a huge loss. So Frida Kahlo, representing for Mexican non-binary sexuality and gender, and also unbelievable art.
Yeah.
Unbelievable art.
Unbelievable art.
Yeah.
And was totally untrained, and is still recognised as one of the best painters in the world.
Yeah, ever. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we can't play a Frida Kahlo song because that wasn't her deal.
We can just sigh, really.
Yeah. Everyone should, at their earliest convenience, go to the library, go to the visual arts section, get a Frida Kahlo book, open it up, and just
read about it.
Be moved.
Yes, she did have an affair with Trotsky. It's true. And she had an affair with a very famous film star as well. Mm. And that got a bit... that had to go... Yeah, it got too public, I think.
Frida. I'm always a little bit... overwhelmed with adoration at somebody who just completely thumbs their nose at the rules.
Totally.
Yes, yes. Look up Frida Kahlo, read all about her. She is amazing. You are on Triple Bypass. This is the Representation Hour on Joy. It's 25 minutes past nine, which means we have just enough time for one last little bit of love for a bisexual artist. Who should we love, Rin? Who should we love?
I think that we should love Whitney Houston.
What makes Whitney so lovable?
What doesn't make her so lovable? She's beautiful. She's such a talented woman, and just another one of those people that just, I guess, got pulled down and torn to shreds by the industry and by other human beings and by all of it. And she shouldn't have. And it's really tragic that such a deeply talented human had to be put through what she was put through, but I think she's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love her. Yeah.
She is certainly well-loved in this studio.
Yeah.
So what are we going to go out on?
We're going to go out on... I want to dance with somebody.
Can I just say, like, yeah. Rin was like, I don't like... We were having a little bit of an argument about music, and she was like, I don't like the 80s. And I was like, what about Whitney Houston? She was like, oh, yeah, I love Whitney Houston. She put this song on, and I was, like, waiting in the car because they were putting posters up, and I was, like, waiting in the car. And then this car pulled up next to us, and they started dancing because this song was blaring out the window, and it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Whitney Houston brings people together.
And yeah. She loved her best friend.
Yeah, yeah. She had like, a really under-the-radar affair with her best friend, who was started off as her publicist and an assistant, and then eventually became her creative director.
Yeah.
And everyone around her in all of the inner circles, they all kind of knew what was going on, but because of the time that it was and the genre of music and everything yep. that was happening, it had to be hidden. But even throughout her like 15-year marriage to Bobby, she still had
Robin Crawford.
Yeah, and people say that, like even Bobby Brown, in a biography said that if people had been more accepting of her relationship with Robin, then maybe things would have gone very differently. Mm. But because she wasn't allowed to publicly have
that support.
It's
a hell of a secret to have to keep.
Oh, for so yeah. long as well. So, yeah, yeah. I love her. I think she's great and it's, yeah.
Excellent. Well, yeah. we are going. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Such a pleasure.
Check
we
out Killjoy.
Yeah, we love it.
I love check how out much homework you did. Yes, check out Killjoy. Happening until the 3rd yes. of February as yeah, part of Midsummer.
Got Queer Joy tomorrow night
yep.
on the 31st, and then we've got our Destroy the Fantasy show from the 1st till the 3rd.
Beautiful.
And they are both going to be very different, so get tickets to both.
Get tickets to everything.
Come three or four times.
I really enjoy this endorsement. Tank Girl on Broadway.
Totally.
Like, what more could you want?
Yeah.
So it's at Melbourne Spiegel Tent, Johnson Street, Collingwood, right through to the 3rd of February. And check out midsummer.org.au for details and tickets.
Yes, midsummer.org.au for tickets to Destroy the Fantasy, and Eventbrite and our social media, Killjoy the Show, for tickets to Queer Joy, which is tomorrow night. And I'm going to give out a special code, Killjoy Coven. You can get half price tickets if you use
Excellent.
That code.
Killjoy Coven. Make it happen.
Make it happen.
This is Make Whitney Houston with I Want to Dance with Somebody
Woo.
Who Loves Me.
Yeah.
Get out of your seat. Dance. It's Whitney. You're on Joy. It's 29 minutes past 9.
You are on Joy. It's 26 minutes to 10. It's Triple Bypass. It is Tuesday night. It's the last Tuesday of the month, which means it's the representation hour with me, Jennifer Piper. And I have spent the first half hour with Killjoy, who I think are still singing Whitney Houston songs as they leave the studio. But here with me now is Govind and Raina.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Yeah, hello. Thanks for having us.
Hi. We're just having a midsummer smorgasbord tonight. Wow. It's kind of exciting. So tell us, I guess before we get into your picks for awesome bisexual characters or people or gods, maybe, tell us a little bit about Bent Bollywood and Karma Dance and what you're doing this year for midsummer.
Well, yeah, we're doing Bent Bollywood. It's a queer dance show. It combines classical Indian dance with Bollywood and queer performance art, and it's really fun, really sexy, quite beautiful. People have described it as being really moving, which is really
that's
nice.
Always nice to hear about your art.
Yeah, and it's on the Brunswick Mechanics Institute, and yeah, like we're doing a split season, so we just had our first run for the past Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and yeah, I don't know, we're still kind of processing. It's just been really exciting and quite dreamy, the kind of feedback that we're getting from people.
Someone who went to the show said to me, I didn't think I could enjoy something so much and be provoked as much as I was. So yeah. I was like, that's okay.
I've seen some beautiful images of the two of you at Carnival as well, wandering around being all...
Oh, I haven't seen those.
cool.
Gorgeous and, yeah, and things. Yes, yeah, so let's get straight into it. Tell me about Agni.
Yeah, so Agni is a god from Hindu mythology, and he's described as being male. And he, mythologically speaking, he's had a number of encounters with people of multiple genders. And one of those episodes involves him taking the semen of another god. And so, you know, being defined as male and then having this relationship with another male god, whilst he's also got a consort or a female partner that's more longer term at the same time. So, yeah, this kind of really... bisexual, if you like, gender expression, sexuality expression, which I think is quite beautiful.
And what's he the god of?
Fire.
Nice. We sort of, I mean, not so much in the Marvel interpretation, but we hear a bit about Norse gods and their queerness, and sometimes Roman gods and their queerness, but not necessarily so much Hindu gods. Mm. Is Agni a one-off, or is it a theme that runs through a few different gods, or what do we see?
Yeah, I think it's a general theme that, you know, does run through various gods in different ways. So, you know, more fluid or open gender expression as well as sexuality, you know, isn't uncommon in the Hindu sort of view of the world. And potentially I think a lot of what we don't hear about it is the result of colonialization and censorship that kind of came about around around the time of, you know, the 200 years that India was under British rule. But, you know, the stories are still what they are and the texts are still what they are. And I think those stories are still there to be read and found and, you know, understood.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing and tragic to consider how the impact of the dominant religion plays out in a region and in a culture. And, you know, particularly when we think about colonialization and the spread of monotheism and particularly Christianity, because, you know, we are in Australia, which was one of the colonized, invaded, whatever you want to say, countries. That we see that shift to a very binary understanding of gender and sexuality.
Yeah. And I think that whole process of colonization or even looking at a culture from the outside and then interpreting it changes often how that the sort of culture that owns the idea feels about it as well. And I think an example in Agni's case is that, you know, he's described as having multiple genders and they're described as being manifest in various body parts. So, you know, his eyes are a particular gender, his nose is a particular gender. And that's a simplified way in those days of explaining, you know, the idea of multiple multigendered beings.
Yeah.
But then it's, and I don't know if this is a result of, you know, colonial or other perspectives, but, you know, a lot of people started interpreting that and saying, well, for example, if his mouth is male and he took the semen of another god, well, that's a heterosexual relationship.
Yeah.
And so suddenly, you know, we're looking for ways to justify why it's not queer.
Yeah.
Once another kind of perspective is overlaid on it.
Yeah.
But really, fundamentally, I think the whole idea of decomposing his body parts into various genders was just to simplify the idea and make it accessible that, you know, people, beings, gods, you know, organic things and, you know, structures can be multigendered.
It's an interesting way to look at mythology and, and religion and how has it been reframed and how can we reframe it again and what is the purpose? What are these stories for? Because, you know, I think essentially it's all about figuring out what we're doing and where we are.
That's true, yeah.
Now, you've picked a song for us to kick off with. Would you like to introduce it?
Yep, I think it's a Rainer's pick, actually.
Mm. Rainer.
Yeah, so the song is Bamboo Banger by MIA, and this is a song that is in our show, and we love it. It's by MIA, who's South Asian, and we love her. And I guess, like, in this dance that we do in the show, like, we... I guess we're combining, it's got a lot of classical Indian dance in it, and we kind of create scenes from Hindu mythology, like bracketing the song. So, yeah, it's a really fun piece to dance to.
Excellent. So, Bamboo Banger from MIA on Joy. It's 19 minutes to 10. This is the representation hour for Triple Bypass, and we will be back.
Hello, Tuesday. It is midsummer season. It's 14 minutes to 10. You are with Jennifer on the Representation Hour for Triple Bypass on Joy. And I am joined by my second pair of guests for the evening, which is super exciting. Last Tuesday of the month is ordinarily a very solitary affair. But tonight I have Govind and Raina from Karma Dance, who have their amazing, by all reports, original production, Bent Bollywood, in as part of Midsummer this year. But we are talking by representation, as we do on the Representation Hour, and we've got a couple of problematics to have a chit-chat about. Mm. and I never thought I would join these two people in one chat, but Gandhi and Karen Walker from Will and Grace.
Yeah, yeah.
Take it away.
So Gandhi's an interesting one. I think, you know, he's such a god to Indian society. And, you know, there's been legislation that enshrines the protection of his image. So, you know, you can't say anything that, you know, is too anti-Gandhi without getting in too much trouble. You know, it's biographies that have been written and letters that he's written in his time have shown that he's had relationships with men as well as his wife, or at least romantic feelings towards them. And in particular, this gentleman called Dr. Herman Kallenbach, who was a South African bodybuilder, who he exchanged letters with and said, you know, things like, how completely have you taken possession of my body? And, you know, and they used to sign off as lower house and upper house, you know, top and bottom, maybe.
Wow.
And, you know, the references are quite clear. You know, it's almost undoubted in the minds of commentators and biographers. But what's problematic, I think, is just the way society's reacted to that in India, particularly around even the prospect that Gandhi might be bisexual.
Mm.
And the idea that this person, this god, this, you know, saint, this wonderful, you know, leader of the nation might have had such tendencies that are, you know, that they wouldn't, you know, endorse. So I've watched that and read the commentary and watched the debate with a lot of interest, but, you know, concern around, you know, the problematic nature of the discourse around, you know, the revelation or the, you know, the idea that he could have been bisexual.
Yeah. One has to wonder as well if there had been no, you know, Victoria, Empress of India, if there had been no colonisation and rewriting and undermining of this extensive culture and history, would it have been quite so bad if Agni had just carried on being God of Fire uninterrupted?
Right, yeah.
Would we really care?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because Gandhi, I think, is someone who obviously fought against the British Empire and brought India to independence, and so you would think would have challenged some of those and been stood up against them. But the reality is he was a lawyer. He was a product of you know, a lot of the British institution. He studied in England. He went to South Africa under, you know, I think an existence that was really still quite, let's not say, quite influenced by, you know, Western perspective. And so his take on Hinduism potentially could have been, couldn't be influenced.
It's tricky not to be cloistered if you live in a cloister.
Yeah, despite how much you might think you are.
Rail against it, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I think another interesting thing is, like, part of the way, like, a lot of people like Gandhi chose to fight for independence was to try and demonstrate to the rest of the world how civilized we were. And so I think that's inherently problematic because it's like, well, why do we need to emulate white people and white values in order to be civilized? And Gandhi is like, I'm not a very good Indian. I'm very critical of Gandhi. I think he's actually quite a terrible person. And so when he was in South Africa and he was fighting against the oppression of Indians in South Africa, like, one of the things that he did was, like when he was kind of petitioning for better treatment, he was like, oh, you know, like, you should treat us better because Indians are civilized, unlike black people. And so I think, like, this whole issue of, well, first of all, that's, you know, incredibly racist and whatever, but I think, like, just in terms of, like, how Indians and how we've approached liberation and independence has been really difficult because, yeah, this whole idea of civilization and respectability, and I think Indian culture and Indian society is still kind of struggling with that because we've internalized all these ideas of, you know, of respectability.
Yeah.
And that's something that we're still dealing with in terms of the homophobia and whatever that we're still engaging with in our society because it's totally foreign to us, but we've internalized all these, let's prove how civilized we are.
Mm. Yeah. And it's played out in different and peculiar ways within that, you know, that society. I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of problematic favourites, I'm going to segue us straight away. And it's, I think this is a thing that we battle with a lot in the broader queer community. And certainly as we talk about perhaps less dominant parts of the queer community, queer people of colour, people with non-binary sexuality or gender, that we have so few examples, so few people to hold up and say, there's somebody like me, that it gets trickier and trickier when those people are problematic themselves. And what do we do with that? How do we talk about representation and accept the fact that people do horrid things and are products of their generation, and not everyone who is bisexual or who is queer and Indian or who is whatever can be good. Not everybody can be a beacon of hope.
Yeah.
It's, problematic favourites, problematic heroes. Speaking of, Karen Walker. Will and Grace.
Yeah, look, my main gripe with that whole situation is just how there's all these references to her bisexuality over time, you know, so every now and then there's a comment about how she's got the hots for Grace.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's I just think it's trivialised so much, and it's this vehicle for unnecessary humour that, you know, there's plenty of humour in Karen as she is, and I think, you know, it's kind of this really poorly thought out.
Yeah.
unnecessary angle on her character, I feel.
It's almost another one of these throwing somebody under the bus to further your own comedy or your own cause.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember there was a reference in one show that I was quite young when I watched it, where it was referenced to her being trans and her saying that, you know, I worked in a blah 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 when I was a boy or something. Yeah. And I thought, well, but
it's utterly unnecessary.
It's superfluous to a character, to a situation. So just purely artistically, I think I critique the character development and its position, the position of those kind of comments.
And Megan Mullally is so funny and so good at what she does.
Right, yeah.
I think perhaps somebody needs to pop into the writer's room and have a quick word about non-binary gender and sexuality. It is 6 minutes to 10. You are on Joy. This is the Representation Hour. I'm Jennifer, and I am joined by Govind and Raina from Karma Dance, and we're going to be back after these messages. You are on Joy. It's 4 minutes to 10, which means we have four more minutes of the delightful Karma Dance, being Govind and Raina, to talk about bi-plus characters, problematic heroes, anti-heroes, who knows? Oh, there's a good segue. Speaking of anti-heroes, Raina, Annalise Keaton.
I love her.
Isn't she just... How to Get Away with Murder, for anybody playing at home. Viola Davis plays an anti-hero, a queer woman of colour who is an anti-hero, which is, Shonda. I'd like to send Shonda a bottle of scotch and a bunch of flowers and a thank you card, honestly. What about Annalise fills you with joy?
I just want her to hurt me.
Slightly jealous, to be honest. I thought that was my role in your life.
Annalise has a husband at the beginning of the show. I think it's a pretty small spoiler to say that said husband is dispatched fairly quickly.
Yes.
But more spoilers. Oh, look, anyone listening to the representation now knows that it's full of spoilers. Later on, we meet Eve.
Yeah.
Played by Famke Janssen. Which is also super exciting, just the idea of Viola Davis and Famke Janssen. I am there. Yeah. I am here for this relationship. But what makes Annalise so exciting as a bisexual character on screen?
I think her entire character is really exciting and just really interesting, like the whole anti-hero thing. It's really amazing. And Viola Davis is just such an extraordinary actor, and the show itself is really interesting and really queer and really diverse with, like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just think, like, I was, I guess, surprised by the, well, not that surprised, but, yeah, I was surprised when the bisexuality came up. I was, like, squealing for a good 10 minutes and I had to pause and then resume and then watch it again and then watch
get the idea.
I really, really don't think you were alone there, right? Yeah. And how exciting is it, you know, that we seem to be entering an age where we can see not just queer characters on screen, but queer characters whose primary role is not their queerness.
Mm.
And bisexual women who don't exist purely to titillate male characters and queer women of colour and the other, before in our 20 seconds left, we have to do a big hurrah for Rosa Diaz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I want her to hurt me as well.
Yeah. Again, you're not alone. That's got to be one of the greatest coming outs ever by a character on television.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.